The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Quarter after eight. I don't know if there is a big enough mug of coffee to take care of today's day here, Dennis. Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law, and he's hanging out in Ashland. You're being snowed on heavily. I know Grants Pass is getting a lot of dumping of snow right now. What's it like in your neck of the wood? Here, it's just rain at the airport in Medford.
Well, you know, it was raining, and then all of a sudden it was like a drizzle, and then just 5 minutes ago, it started coming down. If in the type fill of the snow that we had, about a few weeks ago, that snowed everyone in. What's good, though, is that it's still, the streets are passable. But on the other hand, how lucky we are to be in these snug little houses, you know, while we can look outside at the snow.
I'm thinking about the way it was back in the days. And the last couple of weeks, we've been detailing how towns were founded around here in Southern Oregon and Northern California. And we're continuing today with Jacksonville. And you think about how even the very wealthy and well-to-do people who may have been living in Southern Oregon in the 1860s, 1870s, the level of comfort that they had was nowhere near. Well, even their mansions were cold, right? Cold and sometimes damp in the wintertime.
Very true. Yeah. And if we go back, 175 years ago, where we can see how Southern Oregon really came to power, if you will, this was when you had the Civil War going on. For example, Yreka was 1851. And before then, there were just tiny little settlements that maybe would have been five houses at most. Then what we had, my friend, on Jacksonville was that it was basically January of 1852. Now, this is January.
January, so it's cold, colder than...
Oh, and here in March, we're looking out, all those decades later at the snow coming down. And these individuals, like what happened with Jacksonville, was John Poole and James Cluggage, were hauling supplies in January 1852 from the Willamette Valley to Sacramento.
Now, was there the, what was it? Was it a wooden road coming from Grants Pass at that point, or is that farther up where that happened, the Redwood Highway at that point?
Oh, on that, that was a few years afterwards.
Okay.
You really had on these mule trails, what's amazing, Bill, is that they were usually making their own trails to a certain extent.
And it was slow go, and it was wintertime, and it was just ugly for these two, right?
And really cold, because they camped by a foothill just dug a hole, which I love these stories, Bill, to find water for their mules. And as they dug, they happened to notice a gold color in the hole. And they had found, accidentally, with all the miners trying to do what they could, they had actually found a very rich gold deposit. They filed claims also along Jackson Creek. And it was an incredible find, where large quantities of coarse placer gold that surfaced were discovered. And so Cluggage and Poole filed donation land claims, named their town Table Rock City, and that was soon became Jacksonville.
I didn't realize that Jacksonville was called Table Rock City first. Okay, that's something I didn't know. All right, Table Rock.
And,
makes sense.
And you know, what's interesting, too, is the fact that then in 1 year, it grew from a mining camp to over 2,000 people in the area.
Saying, you know,
hey, there is gold.
Doc, hold on. You talk 2,000 people. That's not that much smaller than Jacksonville is right now. I think Jacksonville is, what, about 2,800 right now?
Yeah, 2,800 to 3,000, and there are reasons for that, and also why it's an expensive town to live in, but a beautiful town to go visit. And so what we had also that had it built, it had a bank, shops, businesses, gambling halls, of course, saloons, and all sorts of naughty little places.
Of course, because that follows where the gold and the miners are, right? Pretty much part of the deal. So we were a pretty Wild West town. Now, at that point, Oregon wasn't even a state, right?
No, it wasn't. Then finally... what happened, though, was that in 1853, a few months later, it became the county seat for the newly created Jackson County, but that same year you had a destructive fire that destroyed most of the wood frame structures. But then what happened with Jacksonville is that what's good ends, because as we'll see in the next couple of weeks, especially when we go into Josephine County, we'll see that towns were like mining camps, and they could have been head of a county, but on the other hand, when the gold deposits played out,
and the town ended up playing out run two. And then I think everybody at that point was betting on Jacksonville because, like I said, it was the county seat. But then what really changed that around was where the railroad was located. It would be like, and I was mentioning a few minutes ago, not having the railroad in your town in the 1870s was the equivalent of not having broadband today. You were just a nowhere. Right? Just
yeah, that's true in that area. And you see, the railroad was, at that time, you had it coming up from California, and you had it coming down from Salem. And what happened, though, was that the railroad then came through, and it actually headed directly to Medford, 1884, and the track did not go to Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Because building the track was too expensive. When you look at our location here,
you would have had to actually veer off to the west, right? And then come back east, then go. Because the whole idea was to get over the Siskiyous, right?
And they just wanted to go straight through in a straight line. But basically, they were really also following the Rogue River that we'll see later. But then what happens is that the county seat moves to Medford in 1927, not only because of the fact of the railroad that came through, but also because of the fact that it had this wonderful airport. And it was the first municipal airport in the entire state of Oregon. I mean, we had a lot of forward-thinking people there that took a lot of risk. Especially given the fact that we didn't have the technology now.
Yeah, even if we did have an airport, even if it was an airfield that had to dodge the racetrack, when they refer, isn't that what you're telling me? The mail planes would be landing with the airmail, and then if there was a race going on, you would have to dodge the cars circling in the track, right?
That kind of thing. That is so funny, because in those biplanes going back then, when the biplanes were coming into the first part of the airport before it headed to Biddle Road, was that the passenger would be in the back seat of a two-seat biplane. Mm-hmm. And I can just see being in the back there saying, I see horses down there. Oh, that's all right, buddy. We'll go over them. You got to watch out for the cars.
We'll go over them. Don't worry. We'll watch out for that. Now, you think back in Jacksonville's early day, which you have in today's deal, is that we were territory. Fights with the Indians, of course, were still something that happened quite often. And food was scarce and everything coming from Crescent City, right? All the stuff came from Crescent City, really, in those days, right? The ships would go there. It would get up on the Redwood Highway, the mule trains, and then the mule trains would then come down to Jacksonville, Medford, places like that, right? That's how it worked.
You know, Bill, as we go into it, we didn't even have the Redwood Highway, if you believe it. You had a toll road, and you see, the problem, though, was that this was with, this is just fascinating, you had the 49ers going into California. When they hit Yreka, it slams, and people say, maybe we should go ahead into Oregon. So what happens then, at the same time, a year later, we have Jacksonville just forming. We also have a ship that goes into Crescent City, but the sailors hear about the gold finds.
They'd quit the ship, wouldn't they? Right?
They abandon the ship, and
exactly.
They take off, and they leave the goods there. And
yeah,
the
heck with this, toting that barge and lifting that bale kind of thing. My gosh, we'll go out and get some gold, right? That was the fever.
Oh, it's really cool. And then what happens is the fact that these sailors actually do find some gold, which is going to be another story, that they then called it sailor diggings, which also became a county seat for a few months before then it headed off.
Yeah, it was all mining, but then eventually the mining played out relatively quickly from the sounds of it, didn't it?
Yeah, it did to a certain extent, but then you had pockets that happened all throughout Southern Oregon which is intriguing. You even had, for example, Goat Hill, which is a fascinating story about one man who owns all the land and happens to have the big, in the 1860s, a big gold discovery on his land, and he forms Goat Hill. So you have all these entrepreneurs. But, you know, when I look at them, Bill, I just see Elon Musk. I see people that just...
The equivalent. Different. The equivalent in those days with the technology that we had.
Yeah.
What I found was interesting, you were talking about how, you know, after the mining and agriculture and the railroad, of course, didn't come, even though we had a spur railroad, and there's still remnants of that track of those rails that were exposed and left in the city of, of Jacksonville streets. But... Jacksonville arguably declined economically for a long time, up and through what, the early 1960s, right?
Yes, very much so. And the reason is that the county seat was now in Medford. You also had Medford that was really growing because it also had the orchard boom before then. So you had a number of things happening. And then in the mid, actually 1962, the state was going to build a four-lane highway, 238, right through Jacksonville's middle. And then a person who really stood out, Robbie Collins, which was really an historian itself, who had been a large timber owner and sawmill owner who then wanted to preserve places afterwards in his retirement, he went ahead and took the head to stop that project. And what it did, it galvanized groups to get together. And that's where 4 years later, the town, my friend, was designated, the entire town core of Jacksonville was designated a natural historic landmark.
Yeah, the landmark district. Now, in retrospect, now that might have been good for Jacksonville. Do you think having had a four-lane Highway 238, would that have been more helpful today when you look at you know, today's world? Would that have been a better thing to have built at that time?
That's an excellent question, and I think it also depends in terms of I-5, in terms of the controversy that happened as to whether I-5 would be coming through where the downtown Medford area would be, rather than the two exits we have, versus where agricultural interests didn't want to have it go through their lands. And so you had these types of issues coming up. And then also, you see, Bill, now when we're so lucky and we look at Jacksonville, this bucolic with the Brit Festival town that is really one of the top 10 places to go to in the United States, in my estimation, it now is that way because of it was so poor before, and people just couldn't come in to build these large types of subdivisions that they eventually did in Medford.
Okay. I'll tell you what, if anybody has a comment on this posting today, which is Jacksonville, we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. We also have to make some time and definitely discuss these inferior court judges. When I say inferior judge, I'm not saying they're inferior judges, although in this particular case, it is. You know, he is
an inferior judge. Oh, and right, because they are coordinated.
Yeah,
far-left radical judges are coordinated by the Democratic Party.
We will talk about that Tren de Aragua issue over the weekend. And we'll be right back with Dr. Dennis Powers, where past meets present, on KMED 99.3 KBXG. All right. Got my renewals for the home insurance. Already got my my car insurance changed around with Steve Yancey because I got a big bump on the renewal. But, you know, Steve, kind of a miracle worker in the insurance world. He's an independent and works with many different companies. And he found me a company that I paid, I think it was, $500 a year less and twice the coverage. You know, practically. It was incredible what he did. Now, your mileage may vary, but give him a call. Let him know. 261-5444. He helps a lot of KMED, KBXG listeners work better deals or maybe even get coverage, period, depending on what's going on with their property. You know how that goes. give them a shot at that, all right? And if you're turning 65 and want answers to Medicare insurance and supplemental programs, talk to Lynn Barton, who has also joined Sky Park, 499-0958, 499-0958. Great people. You can find out more about both of them, skyparkins.com. And as Steve always says,
at Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
If your home computer has issues, call Tech Nomad. Tech Nomad is your locally owned and operated computer repair and tech support. They help with annual diagnostics, tune-ups, software updates, removing viruses, installing antivirus, upgrading hard drives, and more. Tech Nomad offers remote diagnostics by phone, pickup and drop-off, or in-home service. Phishing scams are sophisticated, so an innocent click may be damaging your computer performance or compromising your privacy. Call your IT department, Tech Nomad. Visit mytechnomad.com.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
Good morning. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Meyer Show.
Back with Dr. Powers, where past meets present. Dr. Powers is a retired professor of business law at Southern Oregon University. And Brad, you live in Jacksonville right now. Tell me a Jacksonville story with Dennis, since we're talking about Jacksonville's history today.
You bet. You happy St. Patrick's Day. So I was so happy to hear the doctor mention that Jacksonville was the first the historic district was formed in 1966. It was, more interestingly, it was the first one formed in the entire United States. It was the very, very first one.
No kidding. I didn't know that. All right.
It was the very I served on city council there 2014 through 18, and I was on planning commission before that. So this is something I know a little bit about.
All right. Hey, appreciate the story there. Anything else you want to do briefly?
So 238 is a state highway, you know, went through town, and, you know, which means it's under state jurisdiction. So they had to reach high enough up the tree to stop it. So that's why it had to be a national thing. So it was really smart what they did, and it was also copied by other cities later. But here's the other deal. You know, you get these 80,000-pound trucks rolling down the road. What a lot of people don't understand or remember is that there are a lot of tunnels and things, mining tunnels, built under Jacksonville. It is not a stable roadbed the way that we think of stable roadbeds today. Every truck that rolls down the road through Jacksonville, you can actually feel it in the buildings. If you're in the buildings, you can actually feel the windows rattle. And this is something that we're going to have to take a look at some point in time, is routing that road around, because every one of those big trucks that goes through town, and there's really no other way for them to go, really, it's shaking those buildings and shaking the roadbed as they go through.
So at some point, there will be a bypass, you figure, right?
There's going to have to be.
All right. Hey, Brad, I appreciate the call, and thanks for making that. All right, adding a little bit of color then to the Jacksonville story there, Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, I might also very quickly add two things. One, in terms of Brad's point on the large trucks, very true, interesting stories. When you go back far enough, you'll see where residents in Jacksonville were actually going ahead and digging for gold underneath their houses. And as part of that, you had certain types of cave-ins. The second thing is that this, which is about 325 acres in size then, had nearly 890 structures, but then in 1977, the advisory board, National Landmark, adopted an even larger formal boundary, which included the supporting residential neighborhoods. And so all this came about to, you have this beautiful small microcosm of a town that's really a national determination and destination.
It's kind of an official version, except it's not Disney, but it's like Main Town America or Main Street America kind of thing, you know. All right, let me go to Brad, but it'd be Steve. Hello, Steve. You are part of Jacksonville. Hey. You are part of what, District Number 1, School District 1, right?
Yes, Jacksonville School District Number 1. I went through sixth grade there and got consolidated into Medford and had to go to McLaughlin Junior High School, which was a huge shock for me as a kid. But, Jacksonville was interesting. I actually went through a tunnel that went under Main Street. I think they filled it in when I was a kid.
Was it part of those unofficial gold mines you were just mentioning there, Doc, that everybody was digging in their backyard?
It was during the Depression. People were trying to find money any way they could. And there was, in the alluvium, in the gravel under Jacksonville, was a lot of gold.
Huh.
Interesting town.
Appreciate the report there, Steve. All right, Doc, stand by here. Let's get to Trump after news, okay? Let's do that.
Thanks,
all right?
Thanks, Steve.
And we will do that. And thank you for the calls and adding all that nice color to Jacksonville. 836 at KMED.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
It's okay to ask for a little advice at Freddy's Diner.
Are you ready to order?
Ooh, always a tough call. Burgers, sandwiches, melts, fried chicken, smoked brisket. The daily special looks good, too. Any suggestions?
Well, we have seafood, too. Our hand-dipped fish and chips is pretty hard to beat.
Sounds good.
There's something for everyone at Freddy's Diner in Old Town, Eagle Point.
Open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Enormous raises for top Grants Pass City employees that would give city manager Aaron Kubik a $59,000 a year raise and could give other leaders raises between $28,000 and $77,000 is on the agenda this Wednesday for the Grants Pass City Council. The city has not said how much the compensation changes for 51 workers would cost taxpayers a year. An atmospheric river brought heavy rain to southern Oregon and a lot of snow to the Cascades over the weekend. Some areas of the Cascades received over 2 feet of snow. At Forest ODOT, close Highway 138 north of Diamond Lake, utilities were prepared for power outages from tree damage caused by heavy snow. Congress approved a continuing resolution late Friday funding the government for the next 6 months and averting a shutdown. The bill cuts $30 million in funding previously promised for Oregon. Congratulations to the Crater Girls basketball team winning their first ever state championship in overtime, 64-58. Bill London, KMED.
Hi, this is Cassie from Clouser Drilling. Drill, baby, drill is a statement that might conjure images of gushing oil, and almost everyone could agree we could use more of that. But at Clouser Drilling, we think of the liquid essential for life, flowing water. So while we can't help with the cost of fuel, we can help you source water for your family, garden, and livestock for years to come. For a new well or underperforming wells, call Clouser Drilling for a no-obligation assessment and estimate. And drill, baby, drill. Find out more at ClouserDrilling.com.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease and quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today to get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736, CCB number 250730.
Hi, I'm Michael with Gage of Construction, and I'm on KMED.
Appreciate you being on KMED and 99.3 KBXG. 838, where past meets present. Back to the present. Doc, over the weekend, President Trump ordered more than 200 nasty individuals deported and using a 1780s-era law to do it. And we had a judge, Black Rail Bandit, ended up coming up there and saying, no, you can't do that. You need to send them back, turn the plane around. And of course, they were too far gone. White House said, we didn't defy it. How should we understand this legally? Because as far as I'm concerned, I don't see how an inferior court judge, when I say inferior, I'm not talking about that, like it's a bad court. I'm not saying that. It's just a lower level court. ends up getting involved in an executive action involving foreign affairs and immigration. Could you help me understand this? I just, as far as I'm concerned, if he had defied it, I would have stood up and cheered. But how do you see this? He did. The dirtbags are down in South America, so no worry. They're staying there.
Yeah, absolutely right. When Obama, the radical Obama, was running the White House, he really led a coordinated attack to get radical judges appointed. And I'll give a couple. We'll come right directly into Boasberg. Right now, there's about 6 or 7 major cases going on, but Obama was able to get in 2 major places. One is the Southern District of New York that we've seen, and then a second one is the District of Columbia District Courts.
Boy, that's a snake pit, isn't it?
It is.
Columbia?
And to give you
DC.
One example, my friend, is that the district court judge in Anna Reyes, R-E-Y-E-S, was a Biden appointee, and she is the one that has been aggressively questioning the Department of Defense on transgender soldiers not being allowed in the military.
I don't think they really have any say on this, though. And I noticed that the Navy has already come out and said, nope, if you have gender dysphoria, that's fine. We'll help you get treated, but you are going to be discharged from the service ultimately here.
Well, you see, the problem is with your point is that these district courts are putting in temporary restraining orders, mm-hmm. which is way beyond, especially for one judge in one district court area to do for all 50 states. But the key thing here is Anna Reyes is a lesbian, and she has been quoted as saying two sexes is not biologically correct, and that decision will be coming.
Hey, what biology class did that moron go to? Seriously.
She's a lesbian. But
that's a sexual orientation. That's who you want to have sex with, not what your biology is.
Oh, I understand all the arguments, and you're right. I would be making them, too, if I was in that court. But she is not hearing it because this is a coordinated attack by the far-left radicals through the same court systems that went after Trump and are now, my friend, going after the rest of us.
How do you take that apart? I mean, do you have to go through Congress and jurisdictions, strip it? Do you close down the D.C.? It seems like the D.C. court is designed to be the hard leftist snake pit du jour. Anytime you need some crazy ruling done, you go to the D.C. court.
Well, it's that. And also, as we know, it's also in the Southern District of New York, which when you look at the number of judges, I'll just mention a few very quickly. Southern District, you have Chutkin, District Court, who's saying that you cannot fire probationary employees. You have Vargas, a Biden appointee, that has followed up on a Letitia James lawsuit. And you have, when you get back to Boasberg, so that's in the D.C. circuit. Mm-hmm. He has been the one who was an Obama appointee, and he is the one that's gone through this idiocy of going ahead and arguing that TDA, the terrorist organization sent here by the Maduro regime, can unsettle throughout the United States using the fentanyl to kill thousands of Americans and to do violence and rape and murder young women. And he is going to go ahead and say that Trump cannot go ahead and send them out of the country, which is a total.
Yeah. Under what authority? What is it now? How does a judge claim? And believe me, the court that he's in is an inferior court. It's a low level court. How does a judge order the sitting president? This makes no sense at all, and I think it should be ignored. How would you handle this?
Oh, okay. The reason is that legally, until you appeal that or until you settle it and go to a higher court, that judge has and effective judgment. What's happened is they've bastardized what they've looked at in terms of the extent of their powers, and they're using these temporary restraining orders.
How do we unbastardize it in your judicial or your legal opinion?
You have to do what our Department of Justice is doing, which is to appeal it or to work different ways, like what happened here. Was that the argument, as you point out so well, is having to do it with the Wartime Alien Enemies Act, which goes back to 1798.
And they claim that, I think that judge also claimed that, well, we're not under war. Well, I mean, hey, we may not think exactly. We're at war, but I assure you that Tren de Aragua thinks that they're at war with us because that's what they're doing when they come in here. Okay,
that's true. But you see, with this, what's frightening that listeners need to know, this coordinated attack by the far-left judges is the same thing we saw as coordinated against Trump, except now it's against everyone.
How can you strip that through the DOJ? Is there a possibility of doing this? Because this kind of stuff where a backbench judge in the federal system ends up stopping the president from taking care of foreign affairs, nothing in the Constitution permits this. Everything about these courts were created by Congress. All the courts were constituted by Congress. And so this needs remedied here, wouldn't you say, Doctor?
Yes, I do. But you see, the philosophy being used here, which is anti-American, it really is. It's wake up America.
Yeah, well, we don't have to have anti-American courts, do we? Or is that part of
it? But you see, once you get Obama and Biden appointing fundraisers, appointing people who really don't care about precedent or the law, but their ideology, you get them in there, their decision is final until it's overruled by another court, and you have to work a lot of different approaches so you can continue your momentum. And this whole thing, my friend, is to stop the momentum of what Trump is trying to do.
Yeah, I know. That's what I get it. That's what they're trying to do. So the only thing you can do is appeal it. Where is the initial authority is what I'm asking here. Where is the initial authority for a backbench federal judge to stop a sitting president in foreign affairs? Where is the constitutionally enumerated power? Am I wrong?
What we're hoping, though, is the fact that once it gets into appeal, is that you're going to have those answered. But
okay.
You see, if we look at this case, my friend here, Boasberg first said, who has always been a far left, radical leaning person. And you see, if I was it back in practice, I would have to be. I can't be as open as to judges that I may have to appear before. And so if you're a litigator, you're going to be very quiet about these or try to go ahead and argue in favor of what a judge is trying to do. But in this particular case, my friend, this judge, Boasberg, said, for 2 weeks, I'm going to put on this restraining order so I can look at the case. And then all of a sudden, he is trying to, you know where he's going. It's judge reasoning. I mean, you learned this in law school. It's judge reasoning. And so you know where he's going to go. And mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, the administration puts in this 1798 Act, and they're trying to get these terrorists over to El Salvador, and they're getting into international space. So the judge, which to me this is just so unreal, is trying to throw in a reasoning saying, oh, no, you know, there's no war. So this 1790 Act is not going to go ahead and apply. I mean, this is what people have got to understand.
Oh, it is an outrage. And my point being, though, maybe what we need to do is strike at the root, at the core of the challenge that we face in the United States now. Doctor, especially the left has taken over most of the institutions, including the judiciary, with rare exception. There are some decent judges, but for the most part, it's an ideologically based judiciary everywhere we look, state, federal, you know, it's all there. My point being, though, is that is not it time to attack this whole concept of judicial supremacy? Because if we're supposed to have three separate co-equal branches of government, But the judiciary is the one that makes the decision on everything else and what they're allowed to do. We don't have three co-equal branches. We have one branch, the judiciary, telling everybody else what to do. Do we not?
Well, it's a multifaceted attack by the radical left in judicial, also drive-by media, also in terms of, mm-hmm. of what they did in front of Trump at his speech. But one other thing to bring in is that the whole judicial system is not as biased as what we see in the District Court of D.C. and of the Southern District with Letitia James of New York, because there's a number of areas. Think about all the places that voted for Trump, and they have judges that are more not only conservative, but more law-oriented and precedent-oriented in terms of the Court of Appeals system, which is above the district courts federal, and then you have different variations in terms of the states. And then we go, my friend, into the Supreme Court, and there we got to watch out for John Roberts because he, unfortunately,
he's a tripwire, and frankly, so is Amy Coney Barrett. I hate to say that, but she's certainly ruled this way.
They've come together on major ones that were very important that saved the day for Trump in terms of here his not being thrown in jail by the same junta that's doing it throughout the United States.
Yeah, this is the challenge. What I'm trying to find out, though, is that is there any way to reduce or strip jurisdictions? So that you don't have a federal judge in New Jersey, let's say, saying, I'm going to tell the president what he can do with dirtbags, you know, under 1798 law.
Oh, well, you see, there's two aspects here. It's really actually it's an excellent question, but it's really more complicated than the answer.
Oh.
First thing is that a judge can look at his jurisdiction as he or she believes. And that is what you have all the appeals going through.
Oh, so you have federal judges imagining themselves as Supreme Court justices. Great. Okay.
Or controlled.
Okay.
Or actually, as they hear and read what other judges are doing in that district, they continue the same hold and try to stop the momentum. They know they're going to be appealed.
Yeah, they're throwing up. It's delay, delay, delay is essentially what they're trying to do here. Right?
Well, it's delay, but it's also the fact that they judges want to be promoted.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's so cool when we see that judges want to get to a higher court of appeal.
Doc, let me ask you another question.
Yeah,
we'll set that one aside here because this is very frustrating. But I hope Bondi takes in and cores him like a rotten apple that he is. Okay,
you see what's going to happen is Congress is going to have the investigations. It's already coming out with Grassley. These are the things that are going to have to happen. They're going to have to put more pressure on these judges in different ways, which is not going to be through the drive-by media.
All right, now. There was a story the other day that I think it was last night. President Trump said that he issued an order essentially saying, hey, because of the auto pen, he's not going to recognize the executive orders or the pardons of the Biden administration because we don't know who signed them. Is there any legs to something like that? What is your opinion of that?
Legally, yes. Factually, tough.
Tough. Okay.
The reason is that they have to prove that Obama was making the decisions.
Or somebody else who is running the auto pen, right?
Or someone else on the concept. But the problem is with the proof. But on the legal end, if Biden was not making the decisions and Biden didn't move the pen or was in the room when the pen was moved, that is certainly legally a good legal argument,
okay.
But proving it is going to be very difficult.
All right, the level of proof would probably be pretty substantial, I would imagine, right?
Well, you're going to be going in, by civil litigation members, and there's a lot of things going on here. But this is just the beginning, because what we're seeing now, my friend, is we're seeing how the radical left is operating in a fight to keep its power.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. The thing is, though, they need their knees cut out from underneath them, and it needs to happen pretty darn quickly.
Cash is going to have to, and what they got to find, what I'm looking for, is to see follow the money.
All right.
I want to see if money has been able to come in from these nonprofits through a judge's wife or through the judge himself in his off hours. This is where it's going to be heading to, and this is with Grassley and others. This is where the fight is going. But people, we know, and I am disappointed so much in the judiciary because I learned a different way of approaching it. But then again, I didn't go to Harvard Law School, where in there they say, learn the argument as to how you can get jurisdiction established for you when you are a judge.
And you'll be happy to know that Harvard just announced they're going to have even more free people coming into Harvard Law in order to... indoctrinate a few more hard leftists. All right. Thanks, Doc. And we will talk with you next week. All right. I appreciate the talk as I'm sitting here needling you on judicial frustration. Okay.
We go back for so many years. It's always my pleasure. And you take care and best to you and Linda.
Thank you, Doc. We'll see you next week. Okay. Dr. Dennis Powers, retired professor of business law.
At Grover Electric and Plumbing, service is everything. To back it up, this comment from one of our Grover customers in Twin Falls.
Even though it's a further drive, Grover is my go-to store. Reason is simple. They're the best. Friendly employees, courteous, knowledgeable. What I need, they have. Easy choice. Grover.
This from a Vancouver customer.
I needed to replace a kitchen faucet. In helping me, questions were asked I hadn't even thought of. In the process, I got just what I needed. No hurry, no pressure. And overall, excellent customer service, a great experience.
From Boise, this comment.
Being a retired contractor, I generally know what I need before I go to Grover. It's the crew, the help, the respect that brings me back. Plus, Grover often carries products not found elsewhere. I love your store.
Welcome to Grover. For a location near you, visit GroverElectric.com.
When you shop Grover, your worries are over.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precision and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease and quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today to get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736. CCB number 25073.
857, an email or two of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. While you wait, Crowns, talk to them, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Sue Graves writes me this morning, Bill, there was the Senate just passing the Halt Fentanyl Act to permanently classify fentanyl as a Schedule 1 drug and ensure law enforcement has the tools they need to stop its flow. She says, Bill, how could both Merkley and Wyden vote against this act? Disgusting. Well, this is the same state, though, that that made all that stuff legal there for a while. I feel your pain there, Sue. All right. Hans Albuquerque writes me this morning, Bill, there's been a lot of judicial chaos here. Some, quote, judge says return tren de agua. Some judge orders Star Horse Coffee to pay $50 million, question mark. Some judge says stop the executive branch from executing its constitutional powers. I think America has found the swamp within the swamp, and this is really, really bad. I appreciate that. And finally, on the positive side here, Randy says, hey, Bill, a little thought for the day. Enjoy your life when you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s. After you hit your 50s, it's a guarantee that your check engine light will come on. Keep holding them accountable. I appreciate that, Randy. Appreciate the email. Email of the day, sponsored once again by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry. Have a great day. My email, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. Tomorrow, Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. We'll dig into a lot of great issues, and we will catch you then. Thanks again.